Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
It's the Saturday Morning Update, Halloween weekend. Glad you've joined us. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Yes, happy Halloween to all, and good to be here, Rick.
The president out of the country this weekend. Before he left, he was eager to get the deal done between the House and Senate Democrats when it came to the infrastructure package. We've seen a lot of spin coming out of the White House, but in reality, where is that package this weekend?
All right. There are two key bills up here. The Build Back Better, or B-cubed legislation, often called the social legislation in several publications and media outlets. That is priced at $1.75 trillion. In addition, there is the BIF, Bipartisan Infrastructure Package, priced at $1 trillion. The former was something that the president made an address to the nation on just before he left for Europe. He noted that the package included the biggest investment in climate change, $555 billion, as well as widespread expansion of the Affordable Care Act, Barack Obama's legacy. In addition, there is free preschool provision for children 3 to 4. It also contains many other things considered more social legislation than anything else. And it is inarguable to say that this is the biggest investment of the public sector in the private sector since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society 60 years ago. Now, the president had hoped to have support from the two moderate Democratic holdouts, Senators Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Both said they negotiated honestly, that they were talking to the White House. And indeed, they've been frequent visitors to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but they never endorsed the final package, that is, the Build Back Better bill. So the president went on to Europe, where he's dealing with world leaders and is going to have climate change as a major part of the agenda. He's yet to get an endorsement from Congress on this. The other legislation, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, was something that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wanted to vote on Thursday night, but she could not bring it to a vote, so discussion and a vote had to be postponed. Why was it delayed? Because the Progressive Caucus in the House does not want to make a move on the infrastructure package until their cherished BBB, Build Back Better, is passed and they're guaranteed some of the major programs. So in other words, the most succinct way that this reporter can sum it up is to say that the bipartisan infrastructure package will not pass until progressives are assured that two moderate senators, Sinema and Manchin, vote for their cherished bill, the BBB. It's kind of mutually inclusive is all I can say.
So what is the likelihood that Senators Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin would go for the full Build Back Better package that the progressive Democrats are insistent upon?
I know this is kind of a cavalier phrase to use, but it depends on what day of the week it is. Both have seemed on the periphery of voting for the legislation. Both of them have spoken meticulously about the packages that come up. At one point, Senator Manchin said that it didn't have to be $1.5 trillion, that he could go to $2 trillion. As it turned out, it was $1.75 trillion, and he has yet to commit to this, the BBB. One more thing on all of this. Joe Manchin at one point said that his old friend Joe Biden is out to build an entitlement society. That doesn't sound like someone who's ready to embrace this kind of legislation, particularly when he says it at a forum sponsored by the conservative growth.
One note on the president's trip overseas so far. How would you summarize the visit with the Pope?
Well, you have a mutual admiration society in the president and in the Pope. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has told me at least once and told others how much President Biden admires the Pope and indeed has a signed photograph from him in his office. Well, they met the first time Joe Biden as president has met the Holy Father, and they spoke for 90 minutes, which is long for a papal audience with anyone. They reportedly discussed the Pope's efforts to deal with the COVID crisis, as well as his full commitment to climate change. He also, Biden said, told him, keep going to Holy Communion, something many bishops and priests in the United States have raised questions about. The second Catholic president in history is not in sync with his church's position on abortion, and this has caused problems within the Roman Catholic Church. One other thing. When the first Catholic president, John Kennedy, met Pope Paul VI in 1963, there was considerable wagering on whether he would shake hands with the Pope or actually go and kiss his papal ring, as Catholics usually do when they have an audience with their spiritual leader. JFK opted for shaking hands with the Pope, and by all accounts, Biden did too.
Let's turn to the state of Virginia. The hotly contested gubernatorial race comes to a head on Tuesday. It is Halloween weekend, and there were some costumes involved in that McAuliffe-Youngkin campaign on Friday, and it wasn't a happy matter.
No, it wasn't. The Lincoln Project, which was the premier never-Trumping group in the United States last time, advocating not only the defeat of President Trump, but of several Republican office holders, now have Republican Glenn Youngkin in their sights. They actually wanted to send out on Halloween some campaigners wearing Youngkin buttons while dressed in the uniform of the Nazi Party of Germany. This invokes the image of Nazis, stormtroopers, the gas chamber, and the late Mr. Adolf Hitler. Now, according to Kevin Cork, my colleague at Fox News, at least two associates of Mr. McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate, and the McAuliffe campaign actually were pushing this very odd and offensive tactic. It never got off the ground, and indeed, it shouldn't. Most Virginians, whatever their politics, would be repulsed by it. But it's also a sign, clearly, that if anyone around Terry McAuliffe is seriously pushing a strategy such as this, they must be pretty desperate in the closing days of the campaign. Small wonder, the last Fox News poll, which showed the two candidates neck and neck, now shows Glenn Youngkin with an 8-point lead over Terry McAuliffe.
We're coming down the home stretch. Of course, there was early voting, but where do you see the momentum as we head into Tuesday?
All momentum is with Glenn Youngkin for the simple reason that Terry McAuliffe, with help from Joe Biden, Jill Biden, and Barack Obama, still trails his Republican opponent, the first-time candidate Youngkin, by 8 percentage points in one poll and by 1% in another. In addition, the Washington Post, which has endorsed Terry McAuliffe, has criticized his campaign and his rhetoric at different times. One has to look back and search to find that endorsement because most of the real reporting has been very critical of him in the closing days. Tom Davis, former congressman from Northern Virginia and past chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, predicts not only a Youngkin sweep, but that Republicans win the offices of Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, and take control of the House of Delegates.
We've seen some recent announcements by Democrats saying they won't run for re-election in 2022. Now another Republican is added to that list.
Yes, Adam Kinzinger, congressman from Will County, Illinois, and a six-term incumbent, announced today at the age of 43, he was retiring from the House of Representatives and would not run again. Small wonder. After becoming one of the 10 House Republicans to vote for the impeachment of Donald Trump earlier this year, Congressman Kinzinger faced primary opposition from two Republicans. And then the Democrats, who controlled the redistricting process, showed their gratitude by carving up his district and placing the congressman in the district of another congressman, Republican Darren LaHood. All signs showed LaHood would win easily, and Congressman Kinzinger chose the better part of valor. Now, he said that this is not the end, but just the beginning of his political career, leading to speculation he could run for governor, lieutenant governor, or other statewide offices, or possibly for the U.S. Senate, the next race being 4 years down the line. On the other hand, a more likely scenario is that he follows the example of other Republicans who have moved away from the conservative mainstream of the party and becomes a commentator on CNN or a like-minded station. For his part, Donald Trump's comment was to note that this is the second Republican who voted for his impeachment who is stepping down, the other Republican being Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio. In Trump's very terse statement about Congressman Kinzinger, two down, eight to go.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can follow his election coverage on Twitter at John Gizzi. And you have a happy Halloween, John.
Well, this being Halloween, I was searching for a joke related to this day of Hallow's Eve, and I finally came up with one. Did you know that Cinderella was a poor athlete? How else could she be when she has a pumpkin as a coach?
Oh, don't give up your day job, John. It is 7:19. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll talk with Cheryl Atkinson next. Tony Schaefer's on the way, KT McFarland. But first off, we'll head over to the WMAL Traffic Center, where we find Michelle Murray this morning.
In the district, you will still find accident activity right now in the 3rd Street Tunnel South. Right near D Street, use extreme caution there and follow police direction. Earlier accident on a University Boulevard westbound at the ramp to the outer loop. That has been cleared and everything has been reopened. In the district, an accident now reported that has Sheriff Road closed in both directions at 50th Place. Follow police direction around that incident. And also watch out for very slow traffic on 295 northbound near Laboratory Road with the work zone reported there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly cloudy on this Saturday. We'll still have the possibility for some scattered showers. Temperatures, they should reach the low to mid-60s. We will still have that threat for coastal flooding today. In fact, the next high tide, Alexandria and Washington Harbor, they're right around the 4 o'clock hour this afternoon, closer to 4:30. So have that chance for additional flooding, particularly along the coastal and tidal areas. As we head later on tonight, mostly cloudy, patchy fog, lows back into the 50s for your Sunday on Halloween. Partly cloudy skies, breezy at times, high temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
55 degrees now in the nation's capital, 7:21 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Monday, it's Election Eve, and we'll tell you everything you need to know about the big day in Virginia, plus the president and the climate summit. O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Happy Halloween. Hope you're having a good time so far this weekend. Tomorrow, the big day. We're joined now by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the host of Full Measure. You can catch that Halloween Sunday morning, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning on ABC7. Cheryl, good morning. Great to have you with us.
Well, good morning. I love Halloween. It's one of my favorite times of year. And I guess you could say, keeping in the spirit of things, I have a very scary story on Full Measure Sunday as part of the cover story.
Well, if it has to do with fraud, I know you're on the case because you always follow the money, and this is one that can hit us all.
Yeah, so I looked into COVID spending because we know every time there's a huge government expenditure, there's tons of waste, fraud, and abuse. That's just the way it is. Part of that is because we never develop a system to stop it. We reinvent the wheel every time money goes out the door. But, you know, I added up, we spent about $6 trillion on COVID stuff or committed it so far. That's a 6 with 12 zeros, by the way. And I spoke to an inspector general with Small Business Administration who's in charge of tracking down kind of overseeing some of the fraud and waste from what you may have heard of as PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, and those sorts of things. Well, they have already identified billions and billions of dollars of fraud, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
So what types of fraud are we looking at? What types of entities?
Well, it was so easy for people, particularly when they had no processes in place, virtually no processes to ensure people had documentation. They were going in and applying for these loans that you don't have to pay back, taxpayer money, hundreds of applications, some fraudsters, knowing that they were just overwhelming the system and that some of them would get through. And we're not talking, I mean, I'm sure there were little cases, but some of the cases I'm highlighting are cases of $100,000, $500,000, $1 million, $23 million. Individuals were getting this kind of money, taxpayer money from the government, and then buying cars and, you know, Ferraris and going on luxury shopping trips and all kinds of stuff. And they know, the watchdogs know, they're only catching a small fraction of the people who are actually doing these things.
I want to turn to the supply chain. And, you know, you go to the grocery store, beef prices are up. But you dig a little deeper into the story on beef prices these days.
Yeah, even before the worst of the supply chain mess, beef prices were already skyrocketing. And Lisa Fletcher is trying to figure out who's benefiting from those higher prices. So she set out to talk to all the different parties. And American cattle ranchers say, and they were able to provide documentation, they're not making any more money because of these rising prices. And following the trail, you're like, well, who is? You know, where is the money going? And I can only tell you that it, at least part of it, leads to foreign countries. And it's really interesting. She'll talk about in her story tomorrow how you may think you're buying American beef and maybe some of the product is American beef, but it may be mixed with foreign beef and you don't know it. So part of the implication is that there are foreign processors that are in part benefiting from a lot of this extra price hiking.
It seems that since the Biden administration has taken over, they've tried to reverse just about everything they can that the Trump administration ever did. A lot of it doesn't really get covered, and you're uncovering something that's going on in Jerusalem tomorrow. I find this really interesting.
Me too. Scott Thuman, I asked him to go check out the embassy when he was reporting from Israel for us, the embassy that President Trump moved to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, from a place, you know, that was considered, I guess, more neutral to the Jewish capital, kind of validating the Jewish position that Jerusalem is their holy city. The Palestinians also, it's a holy city to them too. So that's part of the controversy. Well, Scott found out that the Biden administration plans to keep the embassy there, so kind of validated the Trump decision, but is planning to open a diplomatic compound in Jerusalem for the Palestinians. Sort of a, I guess you could say, separate but equal facility. They're not going to call it an embassy. It's sort of a reopening of a compound that used to exist, kind of, I guess you could say, splitting the baby, saying, yes, we did move the embassy to Jerusalem, but we're not saying that Jerusalem belongs just to the Jews. Here we are. We're going to have a facility for the Palestinians, too.
Well, we'll see it all tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, full measure. Cheryl, as always, thank you very much, and enjoy Halloween while we all still can.
I shall. Thank you.
7:26, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're going to be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer right after the 7:30 news with Heather Curtis. And among the topics we'll hit this morning, a little bit about election security as the Virginia race is on Tuesday, the final voting after, of course, the advance voting in that campaign. So election day, Tuesday. Election security. Talk with Tony Schaefer about that. So do stay with us here on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. If you want to vote in Virginia's neck-and-neck gubernatorial race, today's the last day to do it early. Lots of people are taking advantage of early voting now that you don't need an excuse to do it. The Fairfax County Office of Elections says more than 136,000 residents voted early in person or by mail, three times the total number of early votes in that county in 2017. Republican Glenn Youngkin and Democrat Terry McAuliffe both continuing their tour of the Commonwealth today. Youngkin's holding a meet and greet at the Old Town Farmers Market this hour. McAuliffe will stop in Norfolk at 8:45 this morning. If you were at Youngkin's rally in Charlottesville yesterday, you may have seen men with tiki torches standing near his bus. White nationalists carried tiki torches the night before the deadly Unite the Right rally back in 2017. The anti-Trump group, the Lincoln Project, is taking credit for the stunt directed against Youngkin. He responds,
"This is so inconsistent with Virginia values, and Virginians just aren't going to stand for it. And to have somebody do something like that in the middle of this campaign that is just absolutely vile."
The McAuliffe campaign condemning it and denying any involvement. You'll see more police around shopping malls and other businesses in Northern Virginia today and through Election Day. Police departments in the region say there's some sort of threat. Fairfax County Police Chief Kevin Davis.
"And because we're aware of this information, and again, it's information that's regional, we're taking the appropriate responsible actions."
WMAL Sports, Atlanta beat the Astros 2-0 to grab a 2-1 World Series lead. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the ramp to the Springfield Interchange, there was an accident on the right side of that ramp, but looks like that has just been cleared away and no significant delays there to worry about. In the district, there is an accident that has Sheriff Road closed in both directions between 49th Street and 50th Place in Northeast, and you will still find crash activity in Northwest, southbound on the 3rd Street Tunnel right near D Street. And also watch out for delays in the district on 295 northbound between Laboratory Road and Malcolm X Avenue due to a work zone. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly to mostly cloudy, a possibility of scattered showers, a high near 64. A threat for coastal flooding remains along the coastal and tidal areas through tomorrow morning at 8. 58 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're at 7:35. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and also the host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Yeah, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, there's this talk coming out of CBS News, and it was a story that was reported yesterday about some notion of a possible terror threat in Northern Virginia. They're talking about a lone wolf possibility, an idea. Tell us what we know about this.
Well, that's the challenge, Rick. We know a lot about not much. There's been a lot of chatter for the last 48 hours. This has been going on since, you know, essentially Thursday. And there's nothing specific. The rumor is that elements of ISIS, apparently three individuals possibly who were able to infiltrate the refugee stream from Afghanistan, are planning something. And then the target may be one of the malls in Northern Virginia. And so that makes it very difficult for law enforcement to act with any level of accuracy because, you know, there's a lot of malls in Northern Virginia. So I think that's where it's at right now, and I think everybody is trying to figure out what the threat is. What I will say as summary to the whole issue is the door was open to this threat because of the Biden administration's lack of vetting or any interest in vetting anybody who was coming over from Afghanistan. And it has been noted down in Quantico that individuals who were sent there from Afghanistan had been wandering off the military facility, thereby creating this whole issue of what they think may or may not be happening regarding a threat.
Well, you mentioned the Afghanistan refugees. What about the southern border?
Well, that's the other issue. Is it's well documented that the drug cartels and terrorist organizations have been moving people through there, and it's just a matter of time. It's like a critical mass. It takes a certain amount of time, Rick, for terrorist organizations to establish a network that allows for them to communicate, to logistically resupply, to rehearse, and then execute missions. So, again, because, you know, these things don't happen instantly, and I would argue even these quote-unquote lone wolf attacks, which they keep saying are random, which they weren't, are based on some level of planning and coordination. And my concern is that we're going to see the bad old days of the Obama administration return, where we have every other week some attack because of some quote-unquote lone wolf doing something, which is not lone wolf at all. It's part of a larger network.
Now, when you say lone wolf, you know, that implies somebody just willy-nilly going out and attacking. But how much information is available online, and what kind of indoctrination do these quote-unquote lone wolves get from not necessarily another lone wolf, but from an organized terror group like an ISIS?
Their argument is that these guys are all quote-unquote inspired, that, yeah, there's really no link, that they go to the Internet and watch a video, and next thing you know, they're picking up knives and going after people. I don't believe that for a minute. That content, Rick, is out there. It's been out there. There's something more involved, and that something more is actual direct contact, because I think every case we have found after the fact that there was some level of direct like emailing, chatting, something else was there. And this is the part that worries me, is that the FBI has been so focused on things like, the Capitol riot, going to school board meetings to make sure parents don't say anything that's not appropriate. When your focus is on political issues, which has been very clear what the Merrick Garland DOJ has done, you're not looking for terrorist threats.
All right. I want to turn to the Virginia elections coming up. And we
saw
the shenanigans yesterday by the Lincoln Project, sending in a group to stand in front of Glenn Youngkin's campaign bus. And they're dressed in Nazi outfits carrying tiki torches. And we're overheard saying that we support Glenn. That went viral.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where two of the campaign associates of Terry McAuliffe was kind of pushing it out on social media, and then they had to walk it back later on in the day. But that's just one example of misinformation.
So I'm glad you brought it up in that way. First, I'm skeptical. I don't necessarily think the Lincoln Project did it. I think they're taking the fall for it, and they did spend about $250,000 on McAuliffe's campaign. But a question for the audience. I have never seen a black person become a white supremacist, but somehow they were trying to put forward that a guy, a black individual, was a white supremacist. So I'm not quite sure who was doing their operation, but I can tell you that the credibility was instantly undermined by that, and the whole thing was a complete and utter danger to national security. Because you do that sort of thing, you send people out in an environment like that, especially in Charlottesville, you're creating conditions for people to get really upset, and if people get really upset, violence can be a natural outgrowth. So I don't consider this just another political trick that, oh, yeah, we funded this, and people, you know, we my bad. This is dangerous. The left has done everything they can to ramp up this anger, this angst and tension. And so you do that, you know, Rick, someone does something like that, that's like gasoline next to an open flame. And so I do believe that McAuliffe's campaign knew about it, they coordinated, they were ready to tweet about it. I think someone needs to be held accountable, and this requires a full investigation. So again, this is not just about, oh, just politics. We're, because of the way things have been ratcheted up, this could have created an event where people were harmed. And so this is not just your any other day, oh, we'll just go out and do something stupid and see if we can screw up someone's campaign. So it's something to actually pay attention to.
So McAuliffe's campaign condemned the stunt.
You know, those campaign ads, I think, Rick, are something that they are going to use up to the very, very end. And one of the things, again, this is a bit off our topic, but the fact that the Lincoln Project paid for this, they did this event, this could have violated election law. There cannot be any coordination between a campaign like the McAuliffe campaign and the Lincoln Project guys. And it appears right now there is a great deal of coordination. So there's another area of illegality that probably should be looked at in more detail.
All right. One thing you touched on briefly was the Merrick Garland hearings earlier in the week. And one of the things that was troubling as I watched parts of it, he twice referred to what I thought were pretty critical national security issues. And he would say, well, I read about that in the newspaper. Doesn't he have intel on this group coming up to the southern border, the latest thousands of migrants who are headed for the border? And he says, well, I read about it in the newspaper. Well, that's troubling.
It is. Look, he was able to get that letter from the School Boards Association and respond with a formal memo to all of the his attorneys all nationwide within less than 5 days, which is unheard of in Washington. And yet somehow he doesn't understand or has information on migrant caravans, on Afghan refugees, on all these other specific threats. It was as if, you know, he's living in a different world. And what it said to me when he was asked specifically by Tom Cotton and other senators with a great deal of knowledge about what is going on regarding the Pentagon's recent briefing talking about ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other intelligence community briefings, indicates that there are specific threats that they've been able to detect regarding the Afghan refugee stream, as we talked about earlier, and the southwest border. So the fact that Merrick Garland could not respond based on what he was saying was his lack of knowledge, I believe is a conscious political choice that he's made to focus the department on parents and activities relating to political speech rather than on trying to protect the nation against legitimate and well-defined terrorist threats, which are coming back. Leave no doubt, Rick, what you see going on in the southwest border with the migrant surge, you're having a terrorist surge as well. It's just not as visible.
And do you get a sense that the Department of Homeland Security is really any, stronger or more forceful on this? In other words, if the DOJ is trending more toward domestic terrorism, you know, the right wing, is DHS focused more on sort of the international terror threat?
So I can tell you that the folks who are most focused, like any bureaucracy, right, there's going to be islands of competence. And I think there are elements in DHS working with things like the NYPD counterterrorism folks and DOD who do have that level of concern and commitment.
But I'm talking about from the top. I know the individuals at the DOJ, the individuals in the FBI, the individuals at DHS, you know, the people that do all the work. I get that. They are dedicated. I'm talking about the top people, the leadership that is pushing these organizations in these various directions.
Well, the answer is Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, is no more committed to the security of the borders and the refugee stream than Merrick Garland. It's a pact. They've all decided that it's more important to be woke and say the right thing to support the Biden White House rather than doing the hard work of protecting the American people and our interests. That's unfortunately the way it is.
So you're the host of the Thought to Action podcast, and what's the topic this week?
This week is countering human trafficking. We did a special where we go through and talk about the voices against trafficking, so be sure and check it out.
And that's just another issue that is so related to the southern border, but
just seems to
be swept under the rug.
Because they're all worried about parents at school board meetings, not threats.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, you can catch the podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
7:47, Saturday morning update. We've got KT McFarland up next, but first to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray's there this morning.
On the inner loop of the Beltway at the ramp to go on to 50 eastbound, the John Hanson Highway, getting reports of a crash on that ramp, so use extra caution there. In the district, a couple of incidents to watch out for. There is an accident in Northeast that has Sheriff Road closed between 49th Street and 50th Place and the 3rd Street Tunnel southbound right near D Street. Watch out for crash activity there and follow police direction. Also, you will find slow-going traffic on 295 northbound between Laboratory Road and Malcolm X Avenue due to a work zone. Now from GarageDroidPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
partly to mostly cloudy on this Saturday. We'll still have the possibility for some scattered showers. Temperatures, they should reach the low to mid-60s. We will still have that threat for coastal flooding today. In fact, the next high tide, Alexandria and Washington Harbor, they're right around the 4 o'clock hour this afternoon, closer to 4:30. So have that chance for additional flooding, particularly along the coastal and tidal areas. As we head later on tonight, mostly cloudy, patchy fog, lows back into the 50s. For your Sunday on Halloween, partly cloudy skies, breezy at times, high temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
55 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 749 on the Saturday Morning Update. It's 7:50, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. A very happy Halloween weekend to you. And we are joined by KT McFarland. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Now, we have seen investigations, we've seen reports, all these question marks about the origins of COVID-19 and the Wuhan virus. Are we ever going to know what happened?
No. I mean, you know, the director of National Intelligence issued a report saying, well, we don't think it was created as a bioweapon. But we'll probably never find out what really happened because the Chinese aren't cooperating. Duh! Well, look, the Chinese have been stonewalling since day one. They've had nearly 2 years to destroy any evidence of how it happened or why it was created. And we all now, evidence points to having it been created in the Wuhan virology lab. But I think, frankly, the real truth is the U.S. intelligence community, indeed the entire Washington bureaucracy, they don't want to get to the bottom of it. Even if they could get to the bottom of it. Why? Because increasing evidence that Dr. Fauci and National Institute of Health funded some of the research at the Wuhan lab. The Obama administration shut down Fauci's risky gain-of-function research, which is to take a relatively harmless virus and make it more lethal and more contagious just for the scientific glory of it, frankly. And somehow that's what we were funding. In China and in other places. And the Obama administration had the common sense to shut it down. But somehow, mysteriously, between Obama and Trump, the transition period, somebody made the decision to turn that crazy research back on. I can tell you, it should have come to my desk as the first Deputy National Security Advisor. It did not. And so I can only assume that the decision was made by Dr. Fauci and the NIH themselves. Because if can you imagine what Donald Trump would have done with a request of let's have gain of function research in a Wuhan lab? So Trump would have said, first of all, he would have gone ballistic saying, why are we paying American tax dollars to do research in China? They're rich, they can pay for it themselves. And then the second thing he would have said is, wait a minute, this is like Frankenstein create a monster virus, and we're gonna be participants in this? Tell me how a bunch of things aren't gonna go really badly wrong. So he would have shut it down for every reason. So I think that's why they never sort of percolated it up to the top levels of the Trump administration. They knew they were going to be turned off. But what did they do? They turned it on anyway. And we now have Dr. Fauci basically lying before Congress saying, oh, no, we weren't doing that in the Wuhan lab. And yet their own website and their own internal documents show that they were.
I want to turn to the G20 and the environmental summit at Glasgow. You and I swap emails before we talk, and I'm always struck by how you can look at a story that's in the news. You will find an angle or a perspective that is so important and so clear, but we never see it. The media never gets it. As an example, you say that it is a big mistake for President Biden to go in person to these summits. Why?
Well, first of all, he doesn't have to go in person. The Chinese president, the Russian president, they're not going in person. They're going to do it by video link. Most of the leaders that Biden is meeting with, they've known him for years. He's very proud of telling everybody, oh, I've met all these guys. They're my friends. I've worked with them for years. The problem is they're going to see him now. They're going to see his visible mental decline. And to me, my concern for America is that what they see in that decline is the decline of America, that his perceived decline is sort of symbolic of American decline. Look, the shambolic evacuation of Afghanistan, and we now know we've left still hundreds of Americans are still there. our economic woes, our inflation, our massive gasoline prices, our civil unrest, our political dysfunction. I mean, America looks like a country whose best days are behind it, and so does Biden. And that's why I think it was a mistake for him to go in person. But secondly, the entire thing is a fraud. It's a bunch of world leaders and so-called climate experts virtue signaling to the world that they're taking this all very seriously. Meanwhile, to get to this conference, they're burning millions of gallons of fossil fuel and jet fuel. They're driving motorcades all around. The most important people on the planet are not there. You know, the most important person who's emitting, whose country is emitting the most greenhouse gases is China. He's not even showing up. In fact, he's turning on coal as a going to coal as an energy source that they need in China. Look, if Joe Biden were really serious, he would say, okay, I'm going to turn back on the American fracking industry, because American energy independence meant that the price of oil and natural gas was low, and companies and countries said, well, why use my expensive, dirty coal? I'll use clean American natural gas. And that's how we were going to clean up the climate. But no, because Donald Trump thought of it, Joe Biden's neuralgic obsession with Donald Trump and undoing everything that Trump did, even the really good stuff, means that he shut down the American fracking industry. As a result, we now have the President of the United States who's looking old and feeble, who's gone to a climate conference where nothing's going to get done. They're going to virtue signal. And yet he's at the same time begging the Arab oil producers in the Middle East to pump more oil. Wait a minute. Isn't oil a fossil fuel? Isn't that what we're supposed to get off of? So the whole thing is just I think it's a chance for world leaders to prance around thinking they're important when, in fact, they're ignoring the real problems of the planet. If they were serious, they would switch to natural gas. If anybody was really serious about this, China would be there. And anybody serious would not take the promises of China and Russia and other countries of, oh, well, we're going to get to net neutral in about 40 or 50 years, when everybody on the planet who's currently around and attending these conferences is no longer alive.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and you mentioned the perception of the president, and there was so much anticipation, and we were all expecting that the deal would be done among the Democrats to get his agenda moving. That is still stalled. It was the Chyron, the lower third on CNN, that Biden is at the summit, but his agenda is stalled at home. And what does that look like for these world leaders?
He looks like a lame duck president. He's 10 months into his presidency. He had this ambitious agenda that he did not run for. He did not tell the American people he was behind this agenda. But when he got in office, he kowtowed to the radical left of his party, the socialist wing of the Democrats, and he's now presented this, he calls it a Build Back Better. It's Build Back Broke. I mean, nobody ever got rich, you know, going bankrupt, borrowing money. You don't borrow money to get rich. Anyway, so he's got an agenda that's stalled in Congress, as it should. And he looks, he really looks weak. I mean, his look is, in fact, a very big symbol, not just for foreign leaders, but for Americans, of what's really, you know, who's really in charge here? This guy who really shouldn't be? I mean, I feel for him. I've known him for 45 years. This is not the Joe Biden of 30 or 40 years ago. It's very sad to see, and it leaves the American people with no hope for the future and confusion about what the current agenda is, because he can't pass his current agenda, and the far left wants to go even further. And, I mean, ultimately this fails drastically and dramatically, starting with the election in 2022. And I think the Chinese are looking at this. They think, okay, we have the Beijing Olympics in February. We want to make sure that goes well. But look, let's take advantage of Joe Biden while we can before the next election.
Wow. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And you heard K.T. talking a little bit about things that would have come across her desk, and there's a lot more of that in the book. So, K.T., thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Have a happy Halloween.
Spooky to you, too.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense. We'll follow the 8 o'clock news with Heather Curtis right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station.